Thank you for the invitation. So I'm gonna talk about this this work that I did with Andrei Gruzinov about warm inflation. So let me start from a review of what inflation is doing for us. The standard or a standard understanding of inflation, which is that inflation is a theory of initial conditions, right? It is it was invented to explain the initial condition problems that we had in the hot Big Bang cosmology. And what it does is that it erases the pre-existing the structures that might have existed before, and classically makes universe cold and empty. However, then quantum mechanically, it stretches the UV fluctuations, quantum zero-point fluctuations in the UV, it stretches them to large cosmological scales, and that becomes the origin of everything that we observe in cosmology. So this is the standard paradigm. Now, what is warm inflation? So it's an old idea, going back to the 80s, and it has some qualitative differences compared to normal inflation. It keeps the first two. This is too heavy for me. It keeps the first two properties. So it is a theory of initial condition, and still it erases the pre-existing structures. However, it doesn't make the universe empty and cold. The idea is that here we have continuous and repeated particle production during inflation. And as a result, there will be a non-zero number density or energy density, which is in the form of, say, radiation here. And then the origin of cosmological perturbation is also different. It's not going to be coming from thermal fluctuations rather than the quantum zero point fluctuations. So it is conceptually different compared to the original scenarios. Now let's see if this is a reasonable thing to require. So we need to have some transfer of energy from inflator into some other sector that is gonna remain excited in such a way that the energy density in that other sector compared to the total energy density, although it is small, so that we remain accelerated expansion, we want it to be small but not decaying exponentially. So a order of slow roll parameters. And if we imagine that this other sector that we have has sufficient self-interaction, then this energy can thermalize. So we have some temperature, which could be much larger than Hubble, even though the energy density in that sector can be much less than Hubble. These two conditions are, of course, compatible with each other. Like, for instance, today, if we think about CMB temperature, that is much, much larger than the Hubble parameter expansion rate today, while omega radiation is over 10 to the minus 4. Okay, so in terms of energetics, it seems a possibility. And once this possibility is realized, it will have important effects. So first of all, it changes the background evolution. Right, because of this transfer of energy, for instance, we can have this addition of friction term acting on the inflaton. And then we have this other energy density in this other sector that if here I have assumed that it is radiation, so that's why there is 4H here. If I didn't have this extra sourcing, it would, of course, decay as 1 over A to the 4th. As this would be the conventional story, but now it is being sourced, and therefore this system will admit the slow roll solution, which is a warm slow roll attractor. So I can set rho dot and phi double dot approximately to zero and have a non-zero, slowly varying energy density. Now we see from these equations that therefore it can change the evolution of the field, the background evolution, and for instance, given a potential, the number of EFOs would be different in this model. Okay, more importantly, the origin of perturbations is different in this scenario. So let's think about this process of the transfer of energy from inflaton to this other sector. This is not going to happen uniformly. It is going to happen via some microscopic process, which I'm showing it by this dot. So randomly here and there, I have this transfer of energy happening. This is, I produce it by a random number generator, but doesn't look very random to me. So it will, of course, this process will produce fluctuations in phi. It won't be just uniform. And these fluctuations typically will be much larger than vacuum fluctuations.
Does it depend on something besides just the field value?
This process, does it depend? Oh, yes, it depends. You should think of it as some random process that happens in that other sector. We will have I will show you a very concrete scenario. But yeah, you should think of it as something that happens regardless of phi, but because of the coupling to phi, you will extract energy or give exchange energy with the inflaton. But yeah, we will have a very first half of this talk would be just talking about the particle physics model that can realize this. And okay, so yeah, so there will be these large fluctuations, much bigger than vacuum fluctuations, and therefore, in principle, cosmological perturbations that we observe would not be those vacuum fluctuations, but these thermal ones. Now, you might worry by just looking at this picture or the fact that there are these large fluctuations, you might worry that the result would be extremely non-Gaussian. But don't worry, because if temperature is very large, if the density of these events is very large, then by central limit theorem, they average into something nearly Gaussian. It's still not completely Gaussian. We are very sensitive to non-Gaussianities. We can detect non-Gaussianities of order 10 to the minus 4. So still, I promise you that there will be promising non-Gaussianity predictions in this model that could be observable in near future. Okay, so there is, however, a challenge. So this idea was old, but for a long time, there was not a very satisfactory realization of this scenario. And the reason is the following. So generically, if I couple inflaton to some other sector, say here I'm writing some example, coupling via dimension 5 operator. So it's dimension 5, it's non-renormalizable, it comes with the scale in it, F, that I assume to be much larger than temperature, because otherwise this effective theory wouldn't make sense. So if I have a coupling like that, then I typically produce a mass that is much bigger than the friction that is produced. So here I'm just doing dimensional analysis. At finite temperature, there will be a thermal mass the squared of over T to the fourth divided by F squared. While if I estimate the friction term, it will be T cubed over F squared, and this is much smaller than the mass. So typically, before even having this large transfer of energy between the two sectors, I'm spoiling the potential. I'm making it too steep to inflate. However, this is not a theorem, and the reason why we have this seminar is that there is a counterexample to this argument. It's called minimal warm inflation, which was recently proposed. Surprisingly, very recently proposed, even though the idea is old, and this, even though the model is extremely simple. So the idea is that if we consider inflaton to be an axiom field coupled to a Young Mead sector, then the corrections to the potential of the inflaton would be exponentially suppressed if we are at high temperature. At high temperature, because of asymptotic freedom, the coupling constant of Yang-Mills will be small, and therefore the corrections to the potential or the mass that come from instanton, they will be exponentially small. On the other hand, the dissipation term, the friction term, would come from spallerons, and those are not exponentially suppressed in alpha. They are only power loss suppressed. Why? Well, not sure how to. Well, for now, spallerons is just a name, so I haven't even said what is spallerons. But here, my argument is something very general. I'm saying that if you want to look at the corrections to the potential, this is something that you know is zero in perturbation theory, right? Because this interaction that I'm writing is it is a total derivative. So perturbatively, you will not produce a mass. It is only produced non-perturbatively via instanton. The spallerons are, well, they are non-perturbative, but in a different sense. So let me explain, perhaps maybe in the following slide it becomes more clear. So I haven't explained why this formula is correct, but the fact that this formula is correct, it should be a well-known fact. It's just the fact that this interaction that I'm writing, it is... it only cares about the value of phi only via instantons, and instantons will be suppressed. Okay, now, yeah, let us talk about the origin of this friction term that may explain. So, what are the spallerons, or what is the spalleron heating? The spallerons arise from the fact that in Yang-Mills theory, we have configurations that start from vacuum, real-time configuration that start from vacuum and go back to the vacuum, but they are not deformable to the trivial configuration. Once you think about them, I think the best analogy is to think about this pendulum example. So consider a pendulum. This pendulum can go from the vacuum to vacuum by going around the pivot point in these two different directions. And this process of going around is obviously not continuously connected to sitting just near the origin. So this transition, of course, at zero temperature, it doesn't happen. But if you imagine that we put this pendulum, couple it to a heat bath, then because of thermal fluctuations, once in a while, this transition will happen thermally. Also in Yang-Mills, the analogous transition will happen. And then we can define a quantity, this Q of T, which keeps track of this transition. So every time one of these transitions, which are called the spallerons transitions, happen, then this Q of T jumps by plus one or minus one, depending on the handedness of this spallerons transition. So therefore, at finite temperature, if I look at this parameter Q, this parameter Q will have zero expectation value, but it is performing a random walk because of these jumps. And then the rate of this random walk motion is something that by dimensional analysis should be proportional to T to the fourth. The alpha dependence, the fact that it's alpha to the fifth, there are some analytic arguments for it. I wouldn't say there is actually a derivation of this power, but there are arguments that it should go as alpha to the fifth, and then numerically this has been verified. Okay, so now... I guess now I'm just claiming that this is just a fact obtained from the verified by simulations. The fact that the Swallerons are non-perturbative, they are non-perturbative in the sense that they correspond to phenomena that at the small alpha rely on very large occupation number. And that large occupation number, that's why this suppression by alpha appears there. So that part, the occupation number is really determined by alpha. Or inverse powers of alpha. But it won't be exponentially suppressed. There is no exponential price to pay for the for this transition to happen. Oh, actually, in this setup, there is. If you consider this pendulum, because you have to go on top of a barrier. So in those situations, if you have a barrier, then you will be exponentially suppressed because thermal fluctuations have to go on top of that. But if temperature is larger than the barrier high, then there won't be a large price to pay for that. Now, in the case of Yang-Mi's at temperature above the critical temperature, it's analogous to that situation. You don't have any big barrier or going around. You just need to have this collective change that requires that for which you have to pay these powers of alpha. Okay, so now we are thinking of turning on this coupling of GG dual to phi. So what does it do? What it does is that it actually biases transitions that happen in one direction versus the other. And therefore, if I have not phi, but if I have a non-zero phi dot, then in this example, the non-zero phi dot will be equivalent to exerting a torque to this pendulum. And therefore, if I exert a torque, then I will be more likely to have turns or this cycles being completed in one direction versus the other. So this having a non-zero phi dot is exactly analogous to that and leads to a non-zero expectation value for alpha times GG dual, which by fluctuation dissipation theorem will be related to the rate of these sphalerons at zero phi dot. Okay, so now we arrive at this result. So now we have essentially a particle physics model that gives us this gamma. Now gamma here in this example is given by this sphaleron rate divided by F squared times T. Roughly, and then if we are at high enough temperature, then the Yang-Mi's theory can be approximated as being the energy density of Yang-Mi's would be very close to just having being radiation equation of a state 1/3. And then one can see that this system plus the Friedmann equation admits this Dorol attractor solution. In particular, if the friction coefficient is much bigger than Hubble, then this Dorol conditions would be a bit relaxed in this model. I have a question.
So
Sergey
has.
Yes, I was expecting the gods to this.
It's not going through. So his question is why the exponential suppression of thermal mass does not disappear at phi t? Spherons are not suppressed.
This one. Why doesn't this disappear? Well, but this is a
QCD axiom.
Yeah, this is the usual.
Anyway, as for a term like for the mass that is on top of this, there's this plus something, right? That's not trivial.
These phalerons do not break. think they can create some like additional kinetic too.
Create a niche. Maybe I can say this. This might be helpful, although I'm not sure. So here, so imagine again this process that I will call it, this father, and these are this real-time thermal processes that are happening. If I have a constant phi, that wouldn't affect this process. These transitions that are happening randomly, they wouldn't care about the constant value of phi because they are essential, especially in this limit of a small alpha. This you should think of them as classical processes that are happening. Just classical finite temperature processes with large occupation number. Classically, this term with the constant phi is completely irrelevant. So it will not have any effect on the Swaron transition. On the other hand, a constant phi, we know that it has, there are instantons that care about the constant value of phi. I don't know. I'm not sure if I can say much more. Yeah, this I think this result is basically what we always we should be familiar with this. I guess. Okay. This is a very good question. I don't know the answer to it. What I know is that this system is a local attractor. The small perturbations around this will go back to this attractor solution. It's an interesting question to ask if I start from zero temperature, whether I go there or not, but not very easy to answer. Perhaps it would be nice to maybe try to understand it using simulation. Yes?
We will cover this, but for
this F, you mean?
Yeah.
No, here I don't. So one thing is that this is good that you asked. I cannot have, so of course this instantons would also contribute to the potential. So you could, for instance, ask if I can inflate on the same potential that is produced by this same coupling. The answer is no. So for instance, you probably need another contribution to the potential, perhaps with a bigger decay constant, but this F doesn't have to be super Planckian. In fact, you would expect it to be sub Planckian.
There's a different question though, phi dot over FH.
Yeah. Phi dot over FH is much bigger than. Yes. However, much less than temperature. So I'm working in this limit that temperature is the UV scale of the system. And then, alpha phi dot over F is much bigger than H, but much less than F. Sorry, much less than T. No, I don't know if I answered the question. So yeah, f here is a free parameter, but I think to have an interesting situation, you want it to be actually sub-Planck and not super-Planck. So otherwise, this friction becomes too small. Okay, so then what do we do with this? So it seems that at the level of background, this scenario can be realized using Swallerone heating. But of course, we probe inflation by looking at the perturbation. So we should understand what would be the spectrum of perturbations, cosmological perturbation in this model. And we are interested in perturbations which go super horizon, which are distances much bigger than inverse temperature. So at those scales, we can describe Young mist sector by radiation fluid, and then there will be corrections. There will be derivative corrections, which will be suppressed by derivatives divided by temperature, which we award the Hubble over T. So I'm ignoring those dissipative corrections. I am approximating by a perfect fluid with the equation of a state one there, and what is, so I'm ignoring dissipation, except that there will be one source of dissipation that has to be there. It's the one that actually couples inflaton to this Young mist sector. That is essential for the working of the model. So there is this alpha GG dual that I replace it with the expectation value in the presence of long wavelength perturbations plus some noise. And then that same coupling, that same operator will couple it to the couple inflaton to the Young mist theory. And then the Young mist, which is now described by radiation fluid, is just evolution is just controlled by the energy momentum conservation, right? The equation of motion for a fluid is just energy momentum conservation. So this is essentially the system that we need to deal with. And it's one of the, to me, this was one of the most interesting applications of effective field theory. Because now we have this very complicated system, but eventually the story of perturbations will be fully captured by this effective field theory, an inflaton, a scalar field coupled to a fluid. Of course, to be able to make predictions in this model, I need to know something about the spectrum of this noise, right? And this is some input from the UV that has to be determined, or maybe not from the UV, from the general principle. So for instance, the two-point function of this noise at very low momentum and frequencies is completely fixed by the fluctuation dissipation theorem. So that wouldn't be with just knowing the temperature, we would know what is that two-point function. We can also say something more general in the weak coupling limit. Why? Because in the weak coupling limit, when alpha is small, the general belief is that these Swallerons are processes that are have a correlation length of order 1 over alpha t, momentum of order alpha t, and they are widely separated from each other. So maybe you were asking about the origin of this. So this, you should think of them as this Swallerone transitions that are happening locally in different regions. They would happen even if I did not have this phi. So just Young mist theory at finite temperature, you have here and there these transitions happening randomly. But now because I have phi, I'm producing a bias between them. So like, for instance, if you were to count this, you would see that I have 10 red dots and only 9 green dots in here. Okay, so now in this limit, when these are widely separated random events, then this the spectrum of the noise can be actually determined even beyond the two-point function. It will be just a superposition of two Poisson distribution with rates, densities gamma plus and gamma minus, which have a little bias because of phi non-zero phi dot, and then add up to the total Svalon rate. So we get this expression for the statistics of the noise at very large distances. At large distances, this means distance is much bigger than the size. So this delta function, you should really think of it as this smear delta function. Perhaps more generally, I wouldn't be able to exactly determine what is this spectrum, but at least the two-point function is known, and then the general structure would be this, meaning that this thermal system has a characteristic length scale, correlation length, and beyond that, this noise has to be delta function correlated. But perhaps the coefficients would not be exactly as what I'm expecting. Okay, so now, given the noise correlator, let's see if we can go and calculate the perturbations, the spectrum of fluctuations. Still, you might be worried that this is not possible. Why? Because it's true that we are interested in long wavelength perturbations, but during inflation, every mode will be stretched from the UV to the super horizon. So at some point, it is going to experience the range of energies where I don't have much control, analytic understanding of. So, in fact, this is, as a matter of principle, it is a source of uncertainty. It could be actually a showstopper. However, it is not, at least for low moment, low point correlation functions, because one can because or if, but then a posteriori it is because the contribution to the to these correlation functions will be dominated by the times at which the wavelength is much larger than the UV scale. So what I can do is that, of course, I don't know exactly what happens at those temperatures, but I can take this spectrum as a proxy, as an estimate of what's going on in the UV scale, and extend the range of my time intervals from minus infinity to plus infinity. Minus infinity would mean infinite UV. And if it turns out that these intervals are actually dominated by the infrared region, then that would be an indication that perhaps the error that I get from the UV, unknown UV contribution is negligible. Basically, this I can get an estimate of what would be the contribution from this region using looking at various various parts of this interval, and then conclude that at least for lower point correlation functions, that is the small error. So after this, then one can, of course, go and compute the spectrum of fluctuations. The two-point functions, for instance, is given, maybe I didn't say in words, this zeta is the usual adiabatic perturbations. And in this model, since we have an attractor background solution, it is related to the fluctuations of inflaton in the usual way. This 2 gamma times t is essentially the amplitude of the noise that is fixed by the fluctuation dissipation theorem. And this f2 has to do with the fact that the equations of motion in the presence of the friction will be modified. So the Green's function will depend on gamma over h. So it's just some numerical factor. We can consider regime of parameters. In fact, for a very wide range of parameters, the answer that I get from this computation is much, much bigger than the vacuum contribution. So I will be dominated by, indeed, I will be dominated by this noise or the thermal fluctuations in this mod. So what can we do with it? we can change the predictions for the potential. Yes?
Can I ask, like, what do I understand of the
power? This?
Yeah.
This?
Yeah. What's the power? And
oh, this is a very, very steep power, maybe 9 or something. It comes from, you wouldn't be able to tell by just what I showed you so far. It's, what's happening is that, so you see here I'm scanning over gamma over H, right? So this growth is a very sharp growth that you get when gamma over H is large. It's when gamma, we are in this situation, right? Now, what happens is that in this regime, there will be a period of growth of perturbation before they cross the horizon. So between gamma and H, they will grow. And that's why you get this sharp rise here. The growth of perturbation, the growing mode goes as, I think, 8 to power, the 9th power of the scale factor. Or maybe 9/2, and then.
Yeah. Okay. If we go back to the previous slide, like, where should I put alpha t?
Alpha t would be to the left of t, but to the definitely bigger than gamma. Yeah. Yeah. Alpha t is effectively in the gray area. So.
What is driving the growth?
What is driving the growth of perturbation? I don't have a good answer, a physical answer. The whole thing is a The whole thing is a coupled system of a scalar coupled to this fluid fluctuation. Now, in this regime, when energy omega frequency becomes larger than gamma, for a while you go to a damped regime, right? You have a friction. But then at some point, you go to this other regime. But I'm just describing what happened. I'm not telling you the reason why it is happening. Perhaps the fact that you go in the damped regime is obvious. At omega less than gamma, you will be in the overdamped regime. But then there will be another phase. It's, you get it because of this nonlinear mixing between the inflaton and the fluid perturbations. There will be a period of growth, but it is purely cosmological. Like, the rate of the growth is determined by Hubble. So I don't have a microscopic. It's not an instability that you would get in the lab. It's instability with the rate determined by Hubble. It's like getting a tachyonic mass over the Hubble for the one of the modes of perturbation. But I don't have a very intuitive understanding of why it's there. Okay. So what is it useful for? It's useful for saving some inflationary models. Unfortunately, it doesn't save m squared phi squared. In fact, that was my main motivation. I almost gave up working on it after I realized this. But for instance, here I give the parameters. One choice of gamma for which you bring phi to the fourth down to the bottom of this plot. Something that is kind of obvious, immediate in this model is that you generally get very small values of tensor to a scalar ratio because we are producing a lot of scalar fluctuations, but not that much tensors. Why phi squared doesn't work? Because you generically get blue tilt. But this model is. Likes to have more higher, very convex potentials, like in phi squared, you will get a blue tilde. I think the way to think about it is that there is temperature appearing here. This gamma depends also on temperature. And what happens is that towards the end of inflation, temperature grows. So you there is a factor that unless your potential wants it to make super red, it becomes blue. Okay, so however, of course, we don't know what the potential for the inflaton was, so this is not very useful. The way to be able to rule out or detect the signatures of warm inflation is to look for non-Gaussianity. So as we see, there are distinct predictions for non-Gaussianity that we can use to look for. And this it's useful to look at this particular combination or function ratio of the three-point function. Why three-point function? Because the perturbations are small, so it's usually, unless three-point function for some reason is zero, it's usually better to look at those lower-point functions than higher-point functions. So normally, we normalize it in this way, this FNL parameter. And then there are two sources for this non-Gaussianity. One is coming from the non-Gaussianities in the noise itself. So as you remember, I said it has this Poisson statistics. That one it will be suppressed by because of the central limit theorem. So it won't be enormous. It will be sizable. So it can lead to some detectable non-Gaussianity. Turns out more important than that is the nonlinearities in the evolution of the perturbations themselves. So this system of a scalar field coupled to fluid, it is, yes?
That part, I thought what you were saying earlier, like the even point functions and all point functions have different scaling with the problem.
Yeah.
So is the four point function better for that or?
Yeah, you gain something. So there is this price that you pay for a three-point function. But then you have to pay higher price because this power will also change for if you go from three to four-point function. So in the end, this is better. And even better are these, even larger are these non-Gaussianities. Larger and more distinct. Because it turns out that the non-Gaussianity that you get from this shot noise is very degenerate with equilateral non-Gaussianity, which is also degenerate with the kind of non-Gaussianities that are produced by subsequent gravitational interactions, say in larger scale structure. The other source would come from the nonlinearities of the system. So already at second order, you will get a non-zero. When we evolve perturbations to second order, we will get a non-zero bispectral three-point function. And I want to emphasize that there is only a single parameter appearing in this shape of non-Gaussianity. So even the normalization that, for instance, temperature would drop out because when we fix the normalization to agree with the normalization of Planck, then that wouldn't even appear in the prediction for the non-Gaussianity. So everything here, it depends on gamma over H. Of course, if I were to go to higher derivative corrections to this fluid, the other parameters like temperature would appear, but the leading answer is just fixed by this, which is nice, and allows me to draw these nice plots. For instance, if I look at this three-point function, because of translation invariance, the sum of the momenta is zero, therefore they form a triangle. So for instance, I can look at the particular equilateral triangle and look at the amplitude of this non-Gaussianity for that. Then it one can see also analytically, I'm plotting it here, that at very low gamma it is increasing, while at very high gamma it saturates to some order one number. Perhaps more useful would be, not perhaps, of course, more useful would be to actually use the full momentum dependence, full functional information that is in this. And it is often useful to find some kind of template that is factorizable, or is sum of factorizable terms that Kendrick tells me that in this way one can apply it easier to the data. Or at least it used to be the case, maybe not anymore. So for instance, there is this famous equilateral template that is often used in the non-Gaussianity analysis, is given by this combination of these monomials that I'm writing here. Now, for this model, it turns out that it would be, in order to have a lot to describe the shape, you will need to introduce one new template, which is given here. I call it new bar. And here I'm showing the correlation between these two templates and the shapes of non-Gaussianity that we get. Like, for instance, the C211 equilateral shows the correlation function coming from the non-linearities and the equilateral template. So as you see, for small gamma over H, that shape is highly correlated with the equilateral template. But then at large gamma over H, is not so much correlated. Instead, at large gamma over H, it will be highly correlated with this new template that we are introducing. This last one is the shot noise, which, as I mentioned, is always very much correlated with the equilateral template. So it seems that this basis of these two shapes would be enough to at least for discovery, it is enough. If you look at the amplitudes of these shapes, you see that it's for the most of the parameter states, the space, it has values that are not unimaginable that we might observe or rule out in the near future. So for instance, here in the large end of gamma over H, the amplitude for this new shape goes to something over the 40. And say, for instance, the current constraints on FNL equilateral is of order that. Maybe I should say that this other shape has some features that is useful, because it is it looks different from the kind of non-Gaussianity that would arise from non-linear evolution of the structures in the structure formations. This is something that perhaps one can analytically get a handle on by looking at the squeeze limit behavior of the shape. So a squeeze limit means when we take this triangle and we take one of the momenta to be much smaller than the other side, and we ask what is the behavior of FNL as a function of the ratio of this momenta and this angle. Eventually, it will go to zero because this is an attractor model. So there is the usual Madasena consistency condition applies to this model. But the rate at which it goes to zero is different from single field models of inflation. So for those who are familiar with this, in single field models, it always goes as k squared over k, the small k over long. The small k over large k squared, while in different regimes in this model, you will have different behaviors. Like, for instance, when gamma over h is small, then you have a hydro mode that decays slower at super horizon scales, and you will get k1 over k2. While in the gamma over h much larger than 1, you get some range of scales over which it looks kind of like a local non-Gaussianity, so it's not decaying, so almost constant, but it also has a quadrupolar dependence on this angle. This is something very rare to have also in models of inflation, but definitely not won't happen during because of the cluster. Okay, so now maybe you can, I don't know, from this contour plot, this behavior, this particular feature that I'm talking about is, you can see it in this corner. So this is contour plots of the amplitude of non-Gaussianity as a function of the ratio of momenta. So this corner, up corner, corresponds to the equilateral configuration. And bottom corner, bottom right corner, would correspond to the squeeze limit. And then this wedge corresponds to the folder. So as you see, when gamma over H is less than 1, it's basically peaked at the equilateral configuration without much feature. So this is very much correlated with the equilateral shape. While when you go here, then there will be this feature in the squeeze limit and the modulation. This color shows that it changes sign as we go from one direction to the other. All right, so these are the shapes coming from the nonlinearity. The ones that come from the shortness, they are always very much correlated with the equilateral template. So that's it, yes. So I just discussed a model of warm inflation, a model that, a macroscopic model that realizes warm inflation. It predicts a sizable FNL, which can hopefully be detected or be constrained. I should say that there are other models of inflation in which you have particle production. And they share some similarities, but there are also differences. So the models that we know today, at least I'm aware of, they usually do not have this thermalization feature. It would be nice to understand whether there is a regional parameter when you can have thermalization in those different other models when there is particle production. Another question that we discussed earlier, the fact that how big is the basin of attraction, this would be interesting to understand. And it's also interesting to see what would be a nice reheating mechanism for this model. Oh, one thing that I forgot to say, another disappointment, is that this has to be Young-Mies without light fermion, so it wouldn't work with the standard model gauge groups. So therefore, there has to be a reheating, a conversion of energy from this to a standard model. Reheating it per se happens very easily in this model, in a sense that you have the energy density in the inflaton, in the potential, and in radiation, and with time they exchange dominance. And reheating happens naturally, but then the energy is in that Young-Mies sector that has to be transferred to a standard model. Okay, so I stop here. I haven't thought much about it. Perhaps towards the end of inflation, when temperature becomes larger, you might get something. In general, I would expect that it's not very, I don't expect to produce much gravitational waves in this model. But you need something that has large asymmetry to produce gravitational waves. This seems to be very, relatively mild in some sense, whatever happens in this. But maybe towards the end of inflation, when temperature gets larger, maybe the amplitude grows. I haven't done the estimate to be able to say. There are some works. There are some works, but they are not exactly working with this model. It's more hypothetical. So I wouldn't know. Yeah. Every time there is an Svalaron transition, you will. So actually, what happens is that the Svalarons have a directionality, a chirality. One family of them are aligned with my rolling inflaton. One family are misaligned, disaligned. The ones that are aligned are absorbing energy. The ones that are not aligned will give back energy. But since there is an asymmetry, since there is more of the aligned ones than misaligned ones, in overall you will pump energy. This? So the used to be alpha over F trace GG dual. The only thing that I did was that I replaced this with expectation value of the same thing in the presence of the long wavelength perturbations. Now in this case it's phi and say delta rho perturbations plus fluctuation on top of that.
So the first term is the mean of Svalarons and the second term is like the fluctuations.
It's not exactly the number density, but this thing is not exactly the number density of the Svalarons, right? For instance, this expression, if I didn't have phi dot, the expectation value of this operator would be zero without phi dot. Indeed, the expectation value is proportional to phi dot. In a sense, okay, it is morally the difference between the right-handed versus left-handed Svalarons, which is produced itself because of non-zero phi dot.
And then the source of some combination of Svalaron fields.
Are you asking about zeta? That would be given by the usual expression up to the slow roll correction.
So the energy density and the gauge field is unimportant.
Yeah, the point is that if I do this, if you do this comparison, this is only valid when Ka is much less than H. So at super horizon scales, what happens is that since this model is an attractor model, the perturbations of the density and everything will decay. It's just the inflaton which acts like a clock as in this essentially the same way as in single field inflation. And this is just telling you this is essentially this fact that inflaton is acting like a clock. So delta phi over phi dot gives me a time. H times that time gives me an amount of expansion of the universe that will we call zeta. So zeta will be just the fluctuations in the scale factor of the unit.
And that, but is it so it's that the friction is different in different places.
Matt is asking, like, how does the fluctuations in GG tilde like get transferred into phi?
Maybe that's a way to think about it. The way I think about it is that I think of every one of this Valeron transition as some local event. That local event produces some the spectrum of the scalar perturbation. So yeah, perhaps this is basically what you are saying. It's this fact that this phi is coupled to the GG2, also when you have this local event happen, is as if you are actually back reacting on phi on that point. Then it has some spectrum extending all the way to the horizon. It's a local as event, but it will have the, it's the usual, basically what we were discussing at lunch. We'll have a spectrum that extends all the way to the large distance.
Go back to Daniel and your argument until you explain it so clearly. So basically, phi is coupling to GG dual.
Uh-huh.
So GG dual, I get your Q. Imagine that phi was
this Q.
Said in the random walk was
uh-huh.
So you said that.
Right, yes.
You reconcile the U squared having a
let me see if I understand. So you are saying that you are saying that the fact that there is a non-zero two-point function of Q squared, that would be a contribution to the mass for phi? I think that the reason is that you are looking at two different two-point functions. So the one that determines the mass would be the, because basically we are, we want to look at this extra term that I never wrote. Okay, that's right. So we will have this extra source term in the equation for phi, right? And I imagine what you are proposing is that let us try to express this in terms of the background phi, right? As what I was trying to do. So in a linear response theory, I would just call this whole thing, I call it operator O, and then I write this as dt prime, some Green's functions for O, tt prime times phi of t prime. Why? Because in the action, I have added a coupling between phi and O. Right? I guess this is more or less your proposal, that the two-point function, the Green's function of O, which is related to its two-point function, will give me the response of O to phi. And using that, I should understand, I should be able to determine what is the mass term that I will get in the equation. And then I imagine you are saying that this two-point function, I have just told you that it has some non-zero value at zero momentum. So how come I'm not getting a mass? No, I think this is what you are asking. Maybe gamma over f squared. So the answer is that these are two different two-point functions. This is the retarded two-point function, which corresponds to the asymmetric correlator. And this is the symmetric one. And there is a relation between the two. The imaginary part of this is related to that by fluctuation dissipation theorem. And that's how I'm getting the friction term. But the real part of it, it's not directly determined by this. So I can have non-zero value for this and exponentially suppressed value for the zeroth order term in this, which gives me the mass term. It is the case. It's the case, but it's the case because not because of anything more than the fact that we know that the mass of axion is exponentially suppressed at the small coupling. Yeah, well, I suppose in this regime, this is the regime in which you can do this computation reliably, right? Instanton computations are reliable at low values of alpha. Yeah, but I think it's a different two-point function. It's not the one that is non-zero is not the one that you determines your mass. Yeah, I don't agree that this is breaking shift symmetry. The shift symmetry in this model is only broken non-perturbatively. And therefore, at the small alpha, it will be exponentially suppressed. There's no non-suppressed breaking of shift symmetry.
Asian variance is really true.
I probably I cannot give you a very convincing answer. But however, I can tell you maybe this might be a bit convincing, is that this is a problem that I'm not the first person who is considering this. When people talk about the QCD axiom in the thermal history, this is exactly the question that they are dealing with. What is the time evolution of the QCD axiom mass? And in fact, it is suppressed exponentially in alpha. It's written as power loss operation in. In fact, this power law is not even known analytically, but the expectation from numerics, I think, is that there's a high suppression of the axion mass at temperatures larger than the critical temperature. This will translate into an exponential suppression in alpha. Because alpha is logarithmically related to the this one. No, I don't even have references for this one. No, these people are the ones who discuss the Svalarons. Rubakov and Shaposhnikov.
Yeah.